And welcome into the Monday edition, Robbie and Rexrode, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexrode, Ian Safar here with you, live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. Hope everybody had a fantastic Thanksgiving weekend. We hope your turkey was good. Hope you enjoyed some time with friends and family. And welcome back to the work week. Welcome back to Robbie and Rexrode. Here this morning. Joe Rexrode, you've been all over the place this weekend. How are we doing? What's going on?
Yeah, welcome to December, too. Oh, boy.
That, too.
It's been an eventful time. A lot of driving. Car battery that no longer functions. So that's fun. But still took the other one down to Knoxville and saw something I was very surprised to see Saturday.
Yes, that would be two of us. Ian Safar, how are we doing? What's going on?
Well, I picked Vandy.
Attaboy.
So, no, that's mostly just because I wanted to root for them to win, and they did. But it was good, man.
Thank you for pointing that out.
It was a nice, relaxing weekend. Had a few days off with the fam. Yeah, it was good to get to the in-laws for a day, hang out there. Wish it was a little bit warmer. Took the family to the Preds game on Saturday.
Yep, that didn't go well. Nice.
They looked terrible versus Winnipeg, so that was fun. But overall, it was great. Thankful for everything, and hope all the listeners had a good, relaxing week.
Boy, if you were the trio, which I know a lot of people around here are, of a Vols, Preds, and Titans fan this weekend, golly Bob, did you have a nice weekend there. That was good stuff from those teams that they put out there. Lots going on this weekend. We had all that. Joe, we had the Lane Kiffin drama. You know, Marty Smith going through airport security and getting him before he gets on the plane yesterday. Hey, Coach, I weaved around the security guard over there. Can you give me 5 minutes to talk, please? A lot of stuff going on.
I told you I would do hot yoga with you anytime you wanted.
Why does LSU make the most sense for you right now, Coach?
I saw a video of Marty shotgunning a beer.
I'm sure
on
did.
Social this weekend
oh,
too.
Yeah.
So I don't know when that went down, but he was thrown down.
Hey, wait. So he shotgunned a beer this weekend?
I don't know if it was this weekend, but I saw a video of him doing it.
He probably did. He was in Oxford for a long time.
I couldn't tell you when the video was taken, but it was the first time I've seen it. He was shotgunning a beer. Yeah, with his full suit on and everything.
Wow. It's funny you bring up shotgunning beers because we had Thanksgiving in Michigan because Jack, our oldest, couldn't get out of work, and apparently some of the kids who, you know, they were just hanging out in the basement away from us were shotgunning beers. So that's nice. That's always a nice Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
We're at that stage of life now.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah. You found some cans all holed out, like, what the hell?
Yeah, what's happening here?
Good times.
So we are going to get into the Titans and the Jaguars. That will happen. In the show today at some point. I will say, we were talking about this in our extensive pre-show meeting yesterday. This is probably the least amount we're going to talk about the Titans on an NFL, like after a game they played on a Sunday that I could remember. Because frankly, if you watched the game yesterday, you could pretty much copy and paste anything you've watched from the Titans for the most part over the last 3 years, except somehow yesterday seemed to be a little bit worse. So we are going to get into that throughout the show today. We will get into the Titans. Corey Curtis will be with us at 8 o'clock. But we're going to start on Vanderbilt and Tennessee. Vanderbilt, a 45-24 thumping of the Tennessee Volunteers on the road. It was tied up at the half. It was 21-all at halftime. And then a totally dominant second half by Diego Pavia and the Vanderbilt Commodores. Pavia ends up 18 of 28, 268 yards through the air. One touchdown pass, had the two picks, which were basically the only mistakes that Vanderbilt's offense made the entire day. And then another 165 yards on the ground for Pavia as well. Joe, it's the first 10-win season in history for Vanderbilt. The college football playoff part of this we will get to throughout the show today. The Heisman Trophy conversation with Diego Pavia we will get to throughout the show as well. But what a thumping Vanderbilt laid on Tennessee in the second half of that game. And Joe, I knew when it was 21 all at halftime, you figured that Tennessee would keep scoring on offense. But I did look at some people I was watching the game with, and I was like, the fact that Pavia has thrown two picks and they still found a way to end this up 21-21 at halftime probably ain't good news for Tennessee. And boy, was it not good news for Tennessee.
Yeah, no, the ability of Vanderbilt, because Pavia ends, you know, Pavia ends up with a 250-150 game, 250 plus, I think 253 passing and 168 rushing, which is basically like Tim Tebow, Jaden Daniels, you know, Johnny Manziel. Like these are the players in the SEC who have done that in recent history. But it was also like just Cedric Alexander just running wild. I mean, Vanderbilt running for more than 300 yards, 580 total yards.
Yep.
So it was Pavia running the whole show, but just up front, what Vanderbilt did. I mean, I was surprised. Again, Tennessee has had struggles, as we've talked about this year. I mean, you come away from this game on the Tennessee side, that was an embarrassing, you know, defensive performance, and it's been bad stopping the run this year, been mostly bad overall, but not this bad. I mean, and certainly, like you said, I figured it would just be a tit for tat, you know, scoring fest all the way to the end. Vanderbilt got some stops and it just got out of hand. I never would have guessed at any point this year watching both of those teams that Vanderbilt would, you know, win by 21 points in Knoxville.
Yeah, crazy game for Vanderbilt. And like you said, defensively, you know, Tennessee didn't have the ball all that much first off in the second half, particularly the third quarter. I mean, they barely had the ball at all in the third quarter. I think they went three and out on their first possession in the third quarter. And Vanderbilt held the ball for like 12 minutes of that third quarter. It was crazy the amount of time that they had the ball. And really, I think, Joe, the middle part of the game, right before halftime, and then coming out on your first drive of the second half if you're Vanderbilt, that's where the game flipped. Like, they came back, they tied the game. There was the roughing the passer call that Tennessee fans were upset about, but I thought McMurray hit Pavia right in the helmet, and you're going to get that called. So it was a roughing the passer call. They scored the touchdown instead of the field goal, and then they come out on their first drive after halftime and score again, and that's where the game flipped, Joe. Like, it was they won kind of that middle eight of the game, and yep. Boy, was that important.
Yeah, exactly, and I'm with you. I mean, you know, it's one of those – when you watch in slow-mo on the – that was obviously a huge, huge call. You know, that's the difference between a field goal – that's a four-point difference, a four-point call, basically. When you watched the replay, it looked like, you know, kind of ticky-tack. In real time, again, this is when the official calls it, and it's not reviewable. It looked like a launch to the head, you know? I mean, again, it turned like the contact, the level of contact was not high, but yeah, I didn't think that was, it's just, I don't think that's out of line with how plays like that are called. But that was a huge play. I mean, you have that play, you have Matthews dropping the, you know, the touchdown pass. There's some moments in there where, you know, that turned out to be key. And then at some point, it just I think you hit on it, though. This is what Vanderbilt does, is they just get four, and then they get four, and then they get three. And then it's first down. And then they get six, and then they get three, and then they get two. It's, you know, and then they'll get you for chunk plays, too. But, like, the possession of the ball,
yep.
It is very frustrating. It has to be to play against Vanderbilt and the way that they just constantly stay ahead of the chains and constantly give themselves third and manageable where the whole playbook is available to them. And that definitely happened to the Vols in that third quarter.
Well, and again, this was not a fluke. Like, if you watch the game, Vanderbilt was the better team. I mean, the only two stops Tennessee made all day were when Diego Pavia threw the ball directly to him. I mean, they didn't come close to stopping Vanderbilt after that. I mean, you know, the first play in the red zone, it's third and long. It's just not a very good decision by Diego Pavia. You know, Redmond had pretty nice coverage on the second pick and made a good play to turn around and find the ball. So that's a good defensive play. That's probably the one good defensive play that Tennessee made all day. Other than that, Vanderbilt did anything and everything that they wanted to do on the offensive side of the ball. So, like, I watched it. Like I said, when it got to halftime and it was 21 all, I was like, well, he just threw two picks, which he doesn't do, and it's still tied at halftime. That is not good for Tennessee. And I think that shows you, Joe, it was not a fluke. Like, Vanderbilt totally kicked their butt in this game.
Yeah. No, they did. And listen, Vanderbilt, and I know we're going to get into all the playoff stuff. Tell me what offense in college football you like better. I mean, I think I would pick Vanderbilt's offense. Like the best defense in college football is Ohio State. You know, yep. Anybody who watched them against Michigan, that is legitimately the best defense in college football. They got high picks all over the place, like they always do. If I had to pick a team to go up against them offensively, I think I'd pick Vanderbilt. Now, I'm not saying that the overall matchup, you know, the other side of the ball would be a tough matchup for Vanderbilt against Ohio State and that ridiculous offense, but that's the offense is legitimately that good. And, you know, you're talking about basically a 40-point-a-game offense against, even though the overall schedule for Vanderbilt, you know, obviously didn't turn out to be as great as it looked, and it's going to hurt them in the playoff thing. Like, the defenses they played, a lot of really good ones, and yet they're a 40-point-a-game team.
615-737-1025, our phone number, off and running on Robbie and Rex Road. Vanderbilt thumps Tennessee on the road in Knoxville. They get their first 10-win season of the year. By the way, while we were gone over the break as well, they also extended their coach. We'll get into that as well. And now the college football playoff discussion waits for Vanderbilt. Do they have a shot of getting in this thing? We'll get into that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.
Diego, this is going to go down as the greatest football season in the history of Vanderbilt University. What does that mean to you?
Well, I remember telling people at the beginning of the year what we were going to do, how it was going to happen. People laughed at us, didn't believe in us, thought we didn't have this, you know? And so I think it's a testament to these guys, how hard they worked, and the transfer portal.
You hit that Heisman pose in the corner of the end zone a little bit earlier. What does that mean?
Take me to New York, you know? I feel like you go look at the numbers, you look at what we got here. And obviously we did something that's never been done. But it's just a blessing, man, to be here on this stage, something I've dreamed about since I was a kid. Look at this. Come here, John Brody. This is the best center in the league, man.
Heisman. Heisman.
Two-turn. Hey. Ain't no one going on. Two-turn.
We got something special here. And what we say is, come watch the show. Stay for the party on Broadway.
As Diego Pavia, after the 45-24 win for Vanderbilt against Tennessee. So now the question, Joe, is what does it mean for the college football playoff? It's a very impressive performance by Vanderbilt on the road at Tennessee. Frankly, it's a very impressive performance to end the season for Vanderbilt. I mean, their offense is playing, I mean, clearly the best that it's played all year. Their defense, I know that they've played Kentucky, and we'll get to them, I'm sure, at some point later in the show as well. But Tennessee's offense, pretty darn good offense, and boy, did they stifle them in the second half this weekend. So what does it mean for the college football playoff? Now, Joe, they didn't get a whole lot of help this weekend. Iron Bowl was interesting for a while. You know, Auburn tied that thing up at 20 in the fourth quarter, but Alabama ends up winning the game by a touchdown. Frankly, it doesn't really help them that Texas beat Texas A&M, because that's going to be a conversation now of a 9-3 Texas team with the schedule that they played, and now you end the season with a win against Texas A&M. I know they're 9-3, but they did beat Vanderbilt head-to-head. So, I don't know if either one of those teams are going to get in, but it doesn't help you that they won that game. And Utah wins around the country. I mean, I guess, you know, Michigan lost, so that's good. So you avoided total chaos. It looked like Oklahoma was on the ropes for a minute, but they end up coming back to win against LSU. So, Joe, where do you sit on Vanderbilt and the college football playoff as we still have to wait on what shakes out on conference championship weekend as well?
Yeah, I don't think they're getting in. You know, I mean, tomorrow is the key. The committee, to me, should look at what they just did to Tennessee and should reassess some things and should give them credit. Again, two teams have done this to a Josh. And I know that this is a multi-year thing I'm talking about, but, you know, this is something that, to me, belongs in the discussion. People don't do this to Tennessee. Oklahoma goes in there and gets all kinds of mistakes and sneaks out with a win. Georgia goes in there and Tennessee misses a field goal, and Georgia wins in overtime. Two teams have done this to Tennessee in Josh Heupel's tenure. Georgia twice have gone in there and kicked their butt. They don't get their butts kicked at home under Josh Heupel unless it's those two You know, and again, that was what? That was 21 and 23, right?
Yeah.
When Georgia came in there. This win should speak loudly about Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt's performance, you know, Vanderbilt's offense should speak loudly in favor of Vanderbilt. Diego Pavia, I've said this before, but if you do this like the basketball committee does it, there's absolutely a premium put on. Does this team have a player who can elevate a team and can beat teams, can lead a team to win? I know basketball is different than football. It's only five on the floor. But, for example, Steph Curry and Davidson. I mean, there's a million examples, right, of one great player elevating a team and going on a run. I mean, I think that the Pavia discussion should be part of it too. But when it comes down to it, Robbie, the two games that were – I mean, Utah, like, I think Vanderbilt would be past them. But after this, I mean, I think. Maybe I'm wrong.
We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. I shouldn't assume anything. They absolutely should be. But the two games are the ones you said. If Bama or Oklahoma were to have lost, that would have opened the door.
Yep.
And both were so close to losing. I mean, Oklahoma, like I said last week, Oklahoma has screwed this whole thing up. And they've screwed the whole thing up for the country, by the way, because we're going to have to watch freaking Oklahoma in the playoff, and they're boring as hell. And they're not
very good. Their offense sucks.
They suck. And they're great defense, but it's just – I mean, if you – polled college football fans who had watched both teams, maybe they wouldn't know. But if they have watched them, like, you think about the difference in experience of watching Oklahoma in this playoff or Vanderbilt in this playoff. I mean, it's miles apart. But this is, but they're not, Vanderbilt's not going to pass them because Oklahoma has the win at Alabama. I mean, that's the difference. They got beat more soundly than Vanderbilt did by Texas.
Yeah.
But the win at Alabama screwed it up. I mean, it just some things, like so many things went the only way that they could have to keep Vanderbilt out of the playoff, but I just don't see how they're going to get in.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really hard. Like, you know, I mean, the one thing I keep coming back, I know I've been beating this drum for like 5 weeks now, but again, I know that Notre Dame has two good losses, but you're going to have to explain to me what they've done. Like, I know they kicked crap out of Syracuse, and they beat a Pittsburgh team on the road that, as we found out this weekend, it's not very good. Like, it's not a very good Pittsburgh team. And, like, their best win this year is USC. So, look, I know we can – all I'm saying is Notre Dame seems like they're a shoe-in for the college football playoff, and I think if you compare Vanderbilt and Notre Dame's schedule and what they've done, it's pretty close. And Notre Dame's a shoe-in, and Vanderbilt's not.
No, I don't disagree at all. I mean, and that's where, like, you know, I guess technically it's at the end when sometimes you could see a reshuffle, but there's just so little that's going to happen this weekend that matters. I mean, this weekend is a great example of, my God, these conference championship games. I mean, like Alabama and Georgia. I mean, yes, obviously you want to be able to say you're SEC champion, so that's, you're going to hear that from Kirby Smart and Kalen DeBoer this week, but they're just beating the crap out of each other before the games that matter.
Well, and by the way, real quickly on that front, like, if you were a Vanderbilt fan hoping that maybe a third loss in the SEC title game would put Alabama out, I think the fact that it's Georgia makes it even less likely that's going to happen because they've already beaten Georgia on the road this year. So let's say Georgia beats them in the SEC title game. Well, Alabama's just going to turn around and say, well, great, we beat them once too. So, I think the chances of Alabama being left out, even if they lose – the third game in the conference championship now, are basically zero.
I agree now, but I will say, if you're looking for Hail Marys, a Georgia complete blowout of Alabama.
Yeah.
See, you know, that's what you're rooting for if you're Vanderbilt, so that it's like and the argument there is, and Clark Lee touched on this a little bit in his post game, and I think it's one of these things that the committee resists talking about, but of course it matters, and it is. How is a team playing right now? Because if that were to happen, you'd be looking at Bama. Boy, they were lucky to – I mean, not lucky, but, I mean, they were right there. Auburn screwed that game up. How many mistakes did Auburn make in a game they could have won? They just lost at home to Oklahoma. Now they get blown out in this game. That would be the argument, is that look at how Vanderbilt is playing now. you know. And, you know, it doesn't help Vanderbilt. Like, for example, Kentucky was playing really well. They blow them out. It's like, whoa. But then Kentucky goes and, you know, face plants against Louisville, and Stoops gets fired after that awesome column by me about how he's really turned it around. You know, so that, like, that doesn't help. But how you're playing, I mean, that I think that is – you know, that's a hope for Vanderbilt too. Like, look how much better we got. I mean, that's a part of the Notre Dame thing, right? Is sure. Like, but the only problem with, I agree. I think that Notre Dame and Vanderbilt absolutely compare closely. But see, USC is going to sit. They're sitting there at 17. They're going to be right. A ranked win for Notre Dame. A big question for me is, you know, like, or not, I don't know if they're 17. I may be off on that. Is Tennessee going to stay in the rankings?
That's a good question. I don't know,
because that's huge too. If they conveniently fall out of the rankings, and it's just like, well, Vanderbilt has no ranked wins. Sorry. Well, look. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, Miami is in the mix too. Like, there's just a lot that's going to have to happen for the Vanderbilt part of this. I mean, and look. You know, I don't know, I guess, what's going to happen with Ole Miss now that Kiffin's gone. We're going to get into the Kiffin stuff a little bit later in the show. But we've already got a couple questions about it. Like, is Ole Miss for sure going to get in at 11-1 with their coach now bolting for LSU? I think they are. But it's going to be interesting to see what that looks like.
Yes, they will. It's a fair question, but they will. And a big thing that was, you know, what could have helped there is – had the things happen to get them into the title game, and then you have the data point, as they talked about last week. Florida State had multiple data points without their quarterback where it's like, oh, this team's not good anymore without Jordan Travis, and they made the right decision. Sorry for people who still think that was the wrong decision. It was the right decision. You know, with Ole Miss, there's no data point. There's no, oh, we watched them play without Kiffin calling plays, and boy, it's different. So, yeah, they're not going to get – they're not going to – if they got left out of the playoff after what he just did to them, I mean, my goodness.
Oh boy.
Talk about Ole Miss as Charlie Brown lining up about to kick that ball and Lucy rips it away. Jeez.
Oh boy. Can I just say the idea that Vandy doesn't have any ranked wins, given that none of the teams currently are ranked right now, I do not like that narrative and how they couch that like that.
But
I know the teams
I hear you, but like it's just it's bad luck. But like that's how it should. Like if again we beat the number one team in week one, and then that team goes 1-11. How can you claim that as some great win, right? I mean, like South Carolina completely bottoming out sucks for Vanderbilt.
Yeah, but all of a sudden that's like a bad win now.
Well, yeah, but
it's not like a bad win. It's just couched as a bad win.
Well, it's not couch is a bad win. South Carolina has proven themselves to be a bad team. Like,
yeah, but I guess I understand. But, you know, why were they ranked where they were at the time? It's because they have a lot of good players. LSU's the same way, you know? Let's not pretend that LSU doesn't have a lot of good players just because they're not ranked right now.
I understand, but, like,
Texas
when it comes
too,
down
I mean,
to
I
it,
lost to Texas, so I get that. But I don't know. I just don't like it. I don't like it.
It's bad luck, but it's not like you can't do it the other way. You know what I mean? You can't do it the other way where it's like this team proved to be bad, but they were ranked high at the time, so let's count it. You know, like think about how problematic that would be if you did everything that way.
I mean, I get it, but you know, Missouri was highly ranked also on that win. You know, it's just
well, the argument these teams make were like, well, they were ranked, and then we beat them, so that made them not ranked anymore. Like I understand a little bit from both sides, but I tend to lean more towards, like, I think South Carolina is a good example. A pretty good win at the time for Vanderbilt, and then you watch South Carolina the rest of the year, like, oh, they suck, which I've been trying to tell you for a couple years. But, yeah.
Right. Like, and that's, again, it happens at hoops, too. It's like you beat a team. Now root for that team. Right. You know, you're rooting for that team all year to make your win look better, you know. And it just, again, just terrible. Yeah, South Carolina, LSU, Missouri. But especially South Carolina and LSU, right? Like those games should be valuable wins right now for Vanderbilt, and they're not. And if LSU even would have won Saturday,
exactly,
you know that's. I think Vanderbilt absolutely just switches spots with Oklahoma.
615-737-1025, our phone number. More of your thoughts on Vanderbilt in the college football playoff. Plus, what now for the Tennessee Volunteers after getting thumped by Vanderbilt at home. We'll get into that. Robbie and Rexro, 102.5 The Game. Mondays were made for Macero. Big screens, bold flavors, and all the football action from queso to kickoffs. That's how Macero does game night. Macero Football Mondays in 12 South. Don't miss a snap. Vanderbilt takes down Tennessee. Vanderbilt picks up their first 10-win season in program history. Meanwhile, Joe, Tennessee drops to 8-4. And if you look at their schedule, they don't really have a good win on it. I mean, it's not, I mean, sometimes that's just the way the schedule falls, but they basically played four good teams this year and they lost all four of them when you get to the end of it here. So, obviously, Joe, you know, in the immediate aftermath of this one, the Vol fan base at large is screaming for Josh Heupel to make some staff changes, particularly to fire Tim Banks, and Adam Sparks has written a couple of things about that. Where do you look at Tennessee? Where does Josh Heupel go from here? I guess if it's not to Penn State, in the aftermath of the 8-4 season here.
Yeah. So by the way, yesterday at one point I was like, "Oh, wait a minute, what's happening here? Is there actually something?" And it was Richard G. West with the Penn State.
Yes. Now right? the Richard G. West is one thing. There is some betting odd thing out there that apparently has him as a favorite to end up with the job. So we'll see.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Well, that is. I mean, sometimes there's something to that. I mean, what if the topster ended up being right about Heupel? I am sitting here like wondering what Penn State's doing. Penn State. Yeah. What you got, man?
They fired their coach first.
Yeah, I know. You guys got a plan or what are we doing here? I mean, unfortunately, you missed out on Matt Rhule. What a
tough one.
What a treat that would have been. Yeah. Look, it's not good for Heupel, and you're right. It's amazing when you look up and see, like, I think their best win is what, probably at Mississippi State? Is that their best win?
Yeah. That or home against Arkansas? Yeah, one of the two.
And, again, so I look at that, and it's like I could see right now the committee being like, yeah, they're out of the top 25, so Vanderbilt, you have none. You know, I still think that they were – I mean, I think they were good this year, and again, I mean, just one of those two games, Georgia and Oklahoma, you know, one thing goes different probably in either of those games, and I think that Saturday is a game for a playoff spot, or at least a game for one of them to be in the mix for a playoff spot, right?
Yeah.
But when you look at the end, and again, just to get drubbed like this, and after what they did to Florida – I mean, it's interesting because I know people want to say, yeah, this, I'm seeing it on the YouTube chat, which is the only chat I can get on, of course, because that's just how it goes with me these days. So, sorry, text line. Rip away. But people want to talk about teams quitting, and I see some of that. Oh, the Vols didn't care. I think that's total BS. The Vols wanted to shut Diego Pavia up as much as they wanted to do anything this year on Saturday. And they wanted to go end the thing at Florida, and they kicked the crap out of them. And if you want to say Florida quit, I just saw them kick the crap out of Florida State. Well, I didn't see it because it's such a bad game. No one saw it. But, you know, it's a week after Tennessee goes down there and plays really well, dominates, you know, ends some history. And then this happens. And, look, when it comes down to it, like you said, Tim Banks, I think that's something to watch. I think staff changes in general, you know, are I would think, likely, possible. There's some soul searching they got to do. And the defensive side of the ball, you know, it just wasn't good enough this year. Was there some bad luck in there? Absolutely. You know, if they had their corners, what does that mean? But as we've talked about, Robbie, you know, the front seven and just the way that we've gotten used to Tennessee playing defense, which, by the way, was also under Tim Banks, but like a lot of things really eroded this year, especially just run fits and just linebacker play. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that took a turn for the worse this year.
Yeah, it's not good. You know, I said it last week, the difference in narrative if you win the Vanderbilt game versus if you lose the Vanderbilt game is pretty drastic for Josh Heupel, right? Like, to me, if they win that game Saturday, Joe, we're talking about a 9-3 team that, yes, misses out on the college football playoff, but you're looking at the roster and it's like, well, they've got Staley and Matthews coming back next year, and you've got maybe Ricky Gibson back next year, and a top-10 recruiting class coming in, and I think if you're a Tennessee fan, you look at it and you say, well, you lost your quarterback in April. You had your Joey Aguilar step in, do a great job, and you end up 9-3. You miss the playoff, but you're feeling good about where things are going heading into next year with the roster. And you lose, and not that the roster's that much different, right? I mean, we'll see. It's college football. They could have a bunch of people leave, I guess. They're still going to have a good roster coming back next year. But I think the difference in narrative is pretty dramatic from what it would have been had they just won the Vanderbilt game. And, you know, it's kind of a – it feels like, anyway, Joe, to me, a couple days in the aftermath of this, like a crossroads moment for Josh Heupel. Like, I think it's going to be uncomfortable for him heading into next year. And if they don't make the playoff again next year, I think we're going to be having serious conversations about whether or not he keeps his job at Tennessee.
Yeah. I can't disagree. And I guess, you know, I mentioned Topmeyer earlier. Well, you can go back to, you know, that column he wrote. And we had him on kind of like, okay, really hot seat? But that is the thing. He did point out it's like Florida and Vanderbilt, those two games. And, yeah, I think even, like, if they lost 38-35 Saturday, people would be upset. Okay, let's not get it twisted. People would be upset. If you're a Tennessee fan, and Tennessee loses to Vanderbilt, in all likelihood, you're probably not happy with your coach. That's historically, I would say, true, right? Is it different because this is the greatest Vanderbilt team of all time? Sure. Yes. But this was also a blowout. And so I'm with you. It's a tricky spot because I think that there's a lot to like about what next year's team could be. But it still comes down to, You are going to have, I think, I don't think there's going to be a portal. I mean, to me, that would almost be a panic move to really go into the portal and try to pay a veteran to come in. But you're probably going to.
I would probably consider it if I were.
You would consider it? Yeah. Maybe this changes the math for him on that a little bit, you know. But he has two, right now we would assume, two very talented possibilities. It's just you're talking a redshirt freshman and a true freshman.
Yeah.
Are you comfortable with one of, you know, a redshirt freshman or a true freshman navigating things? And in what I agree with you is such a critical year with a really tough schedule. I mean, a lot of those top games are at home, but still, I mean, it's a they've got, you know, they got the short straw next year, I'm sure, compared to a lot of teams in the SEC and what their schedules look like.
Well, and they've got, you know, at the end of last year, even though they made the college football playoff, so it's a different scenario, obviously, you know, Tennessee fans were calling for him to fire the offensive coordinator, and he didn't do it. I'm interested to see what it looks like here. Like, I think he needs to fire Tim Banks. I'm sorry. Like, I understand that they – didn't have Jermon McCoy and Ricky Gibson basically all year. I know Gibson played for like a half against Syracuse, but you know, you're down your two top corners all year, so I get that. That's a problem. That defense, by the numbers, is too talented to be as bad as they were this year, and that's a problem. And I think if you're Heupel, you got to take a very serious look at that heading into next year. I mean, look, I guess there's a chance that you know, Joey Aguilar could be back as quarterback next year. I still think that's kind of unlikely.
There's a lawsuit.
There's a lawsuit.
I don't think that's going to happen. If it did, that'd be great for them because he's not perfect, but I think his skill set worked well. And that's the thing too. Like, if you can step back as a Vols fan, go back to Nico leaving, go back to them not being able to get Luke Altmaier and several other guys that they tried to get, basically settling on Joey Aguilar.
Yeah.
And then tell you at that time they're going to go 8-4. You're like, okay. I mean, that's disappointing, but okay. You know, but again, it's how it happens. Because the thing is, the offense was actually pretty freaking good this year, which is great. But that's another thing to remember, Robbie. I think that the Tim Banks discussion is totally fair to have. But everybody did want the OC fired last year, right? And now he's okay, you know? You look at the entirety of Tim Banks, their defense got better and better. And their defense basically carried them to the playoff last year, right?
Yes.
That said, I can't disagree.
It was
like
that bad this year.
It was bad. No, it was. So I think it's a fair discussion to have. I think it's – and again, sometimes it's the coordinator. Sometimes there's a position coach or two who just aren't getting it done. And if you fix that, you know, then it can be – I mean, that's the thing. These are things that Heupel knows that we don't know, you know.
Yeah.
I do think that if he doesn't do anything, if it's just
not
like,
going to go well.
Yeah, if it's just like, not business as usual, here we go, then I think that – he just turned the temp up a little bit, right? He just went over to the oven and put it from 350 to 425.
Let's welcome in Adam in Portland to the program on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Adam, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
Yeah, man. I don't want to just disagree with you, but I will say I feel like there's two ways to look at it. You said one. Joe said one. I personally, man, I'm on the side of what a season, like comparatively, like, what we could have been through and what we went through are completely different things. And we lost our quarterback immediately, and they managed to still have a killer offense. Like, their defense, yeah, I get it. Like, maybe replace a coordinator there, but I was really proud of that UT team and the effort they put on this year. Like, you look at the Titans, and it's all doom and gloom. They don't have a coach. They don't have any players to give you hope. Heupel, I think, is an amazing coach. And I say that as somebody who doesn't love him as much as you do, Robbie, but I do love watching him. And just to know where we were, like, he took that job with so much hate at Tennessee and so little success, and has turned it into what it is. So I'm on the side of just being proud of him, and I don't see any way he's on the hot seat next year. So that's just me, man.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Adam. We will respond to that coming up next. A lot of thoughts to get to on the Tennessee front. We will do that. We will get into the Titans and their loss to Jacksonville coming up as well. All that ahead, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Taking your thoughts on some college football. Vanderbilt gets their first 10-win season in program history. Clark Lee with a contract extension. And where do we go from here on the Tennessee front? 8-4. If you look at their schedule, not really a great win on the schedule for Tennessee this year. Taking your thoughts on all that, 615-737-1025. Now, Joe, I largely think Josh Heupel has done a really good job. I think the Tennessee fans that want him fired like right now are crazy. I think he's by far done more than enough to warrant, you know, getting a chance to turn this around and fix it heading into next year. But I do recognize that if he doesn't, then I think you have to that would be year six at that point. Then I think you have to start to have real conversations of, all right, well, where is this all going here? Because, like you said, I mean, frankly, from a scheduling standpoint this year, it worked out pretty well for Tennessee. You had Georgia at home. You let that game get away from you. You had Oklahoma at home. You had Vanderbilt at home. Three of the four losses we're talking about came at home, at Neyland Stadium, where they've been borderline invincible except for Georgia over the years, and they just weren't this year. So where is this all heading into next year? Like, if they're not, I guess I won't say outright in the playoff, even though I think a lot of Tennessee fans will feel that way, but if they're not at least heavily in the playoff discussion by the time Selection Sunday comes around next year, Joe, then I think that's going to be a big problem for Josh Heupel.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, by the way, they've pushed the the deadline back on. We were supposed to know by now if it's going to be 12 or expanded next year. They pushed the deadline back, so it's still possible. It's a bigger field. I hope it's 12 again. I mean, look, I'd take 10 years of 12 and let's try that, you know. But so if it's a little bit bigger field, that makes it even, you know, less and less acceptable for Tennessee and other programs that don't get into the field. He's got to be right there for sure. And how does it look, right? Like, we can talk about records and all that stuff, but like, how does it look? And a question you ask yourself if you're Tennessee. Yeah, so what's more marketable right now? I mean, not just Tennessee, any job where you're not sure about your coach, or maybe you think you wonder if maybe you've hit your ceiling with your coach. How marketable is your job to other coaches, and how marketable is your coach to other jobs?
Right.
And I would argue right now that Tennessee would be a very coveted job for prominent coaching candidates right now if it were to open. And look, I think, I mean, look, we're talking about hype old Penn State. I have no idea if there's been any inkling of actual interest there. But I don't think Heupel, I mean, I think Heupel would draw interest too. But, you know, seasons like this maybe tilt the scales a little bit more toward your job being more marketable. And, look, it is possible. We've talked for years. Is Heupel going to end up being a quote-unquote bridge coach who stabilizes things in a place that badly needed it, deserves so much credit, big picture, for what he's done to bring Tennessee back into relevance and into consistent success and stability? And again, they just made the playoff last year too, by the way. And you know, in 2022, they were on their way to the 4-team playoff. I mean, overall, he's done very well. But is it times after next year, if it doesn't go well, to sort of say, okay, who's the coach who can win a national championship at Tennessee? Because, you know, we do have Ole Miss in this playoff, but we are still waiting for a team that runs like that offense to win a national championship.
Who would you rather have as your coach, Heupel or Clark Lee?
I mean, it's good, right good now question. It's hard to argue against Clark Lee based on what we just saw, right? I mean,
so if you're Tennessee, do you feel like you need to make a move if Vandy maybe has the one up on you on coach?
Well, I don't know. I mean, next year, that's the thing. Joe mentioned the schedule. You've got Alabama at home, LSU at home, Texas at home. You're on the road at A&M. By the way, you're non-conference. You got a road game at Georgia Tech, which is not going to be a cakewalk either. I mean, you got a tough schedule next year if you're Tennessee. That's not even mentioning Auburn, who just hired Alex Golas. I mean, you got to go on and play Beamer on the road, assuming he still has his job there at that point. I mean, you know, Vanderbilt on the road, like they got a tough schedule next year. So if they make the playoff next year, Joe, they will have earned it with the schedule that I'm looking at right now.
Yeah, and that's an interesting question about, you know, Lee and Heupel. I mean, look, if you're answering that question 2 days after what Clark Lee did, he just authored the greatest season of Vanderbilt history, you know. It's easy to say Lee right now. I mean, but you know, it's also like Heupel has had a longer run, right, of success with ups. I mean, like with Clark Lee, and we don't need to get into this right now, but there is definitely going to be like, okay, post Diego Pavia now, what are you doing? You know, right. which is a fair thing to have. Also, great for Vanderbilt to get him locked up because he's a damn good coach, and great for him. But that is an interesting way to frame it, Ian. You know, if you want to just compare those two, when it comes down to it, yeah. Look, Heupel has got to fix some things that were broken this year. I think he does have to do – he's got to do some things, I think, with his staff. And it's not like you do it just to placate the fans. Like, you do it because you're doing it to make yourself better. But there are coaches who struggle with that, right? There are coaches where sometimes I think loyalty, while it's admirable, and it's like the opposite of, say, Lane Kiffin, it's also – sometimes you have to be a little bit cutthroat. And just be like, you know what? I can upgrade here, and I'm sorry. I mean, look, it happened to Heupel at Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Right? Now, that may be a reason he is deterred from doing stuff like that because of how he got scapegoated at Oklahoma. But sometimes in this business, you have to do stuff like that.
Well, and last thing I'll say on the Heupel front, and we'll get into the Titans coming up next. Tennessee has not been overly aggressive in the transfer portal. They have made some very impactful ads in the transfer portal, right? But it's not like they've gone out there and in huge numbers just brought in all these dudes from the portal. I might take a look at that this offseason if you're Heupel. With, you know, the roster that you've got coming back, you know, you got the Adidas deal coming down the pike. There's a lot of money that you've got. Like we just talked about it. It's a really, really critical year for you next year. I'm interested to see what his approach is going to be on that.
Yeah, real fast on that. I agree. I think you need to get in on some big, big targets. But also, like, as well as their high school recruiting has gone, I still think the best programs are still – the lifeblood is that, you know. And you want to be that. You want to have stability and carryover and not be huge numbers in and out. But they definitely need to go in and get into some bidding wars for some of the top targets and win some of those battles.
As bad as the Titans have looked over the past few years, they somehow looked worse yesterday. We'll get into that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.